You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And because it is turkey season, we're still continuing the trend of talking about turkey hunting gear and equipment. And today, we're going to be talking with John Mulligan of Bourbon Barrel Game Calls to talk about his slate calls, to talk about his Made in America products, the material that he reclaims for his raw materials to build his calls. It's a pretty interesting story of where the company came from. The cool thing about this episode is before we get into the meat and potatoes of Bourbon Barrel Calls, we talk about what it's like kind of being self-employed, being an entrepreneur, not just in the hunting industry space, but just in general. Like guys who, you know, he used to own a landscaping company, right? And so there's these pluses, there's these positives and these negatives when it comes to owning your own business. And it's a pretty cool discussion. And so that's the intro. And then we obviously get into the meat and potatoes of this episode, which is Bourbon Barrel Game Calls. I'll tell you this, man, like, I'm trying to see, we talk about this, who is the most bougie of all of the hunters, and John seems to think it is it's duck and geese hunters, waterfowlers. I don't think I am bougie when it comes to my hunting gear and equipment, but on average, I think there's a lot of guys out there in the deer hunting world who are pretty bougie when it comes to the products and the gear that they use. So, and the amount of money that they spend. I think a lot of times people think price reflects quality. In some cases, absolutely, but in others, I'm not so sure. So, excellent episode. Before we get into today's episode, I got to do some commercials. And the first commercial goes to Feed Hub. If you are looking for a device, well, let me just tell you what Feed Hub is real quick. Feed Hub is a device that can connect to any spin cast feeder on the market, and it allows you to remotely and on demand schedule feeding times. It allows you to give, it gives you a signal when the feeder itself is clogged, so then you can remotely try to unclog it. It allows you to set times, feeding times. It allows you to observe the feeding levels in your hopper, and it just keeps you on point when it is time to check your feeders. And this is a product that if you are a supplemental feeder before or after the season starts, and you are also able to hunt or bait in certain areas, this is a product definitely for you. And what it does is it connects to the Moultrie Mobile system, so you can use your Moultrie Mobile cell cameras, and you can check your feeders all on the Moultrie Mobile app. So go to MoultrieMobile.com. Check out the Feed Hub. Dude, it's a pretty unique product, man, especially for the people who run feeders or who are allowed to bait before, after, or during the season. So go check out Feed Hub. Next is Code Blue Sense. Before I forget, I have a discount code for Code Blue Sense, and that is NFC20. That's going to get you 20% off of your purchase. I am going to be heading to some of my properties within the next handful of weeks to do some habitat improvement. I got permission to do some chainsaw work in one of the properties that I hunt. And so I'm going to be going there, updating my trail cameras. I'm going to be putting out some mineral. I'm going to be doing some chainsaw work, adjusting some tree stands, and really looking forward to that. And also, I'm going to be putting and making mock scrapes. And so a lot of people would ask me, why are you doing mock scrapes right now in April and May when the breeding season isn't for, you know, all these months? It has nothing to do with breeding. It has everything to do with getting deer to feel comfortable around these mock scrapes, get the scent on them, get them coming in to investigate, and getting those setups within shooting range of a tree stand. And that's the whole goal, right? So I've done the inventory thing. Now I want to be able to use, and I know that they work. So what I want to do is I want to get a mock scrape within every single, I guess you would say, every single, tree stand that I have or hunting location that I have on the property. And I really do think it's going to work if I can do it right and it doesn't interfere with my access routes or my what my scent is doing while in the tree stand. So I'm really looking forward to that. Go to codebluescents.com and check out the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit, and also check out the all their real and synthetic deer urines, as well as their scent elimination products as well. So codebluescents.com, go check them out. Huge shout out to Code Blue and Feed Hub for taking time out of their, you know, and their budget to work with me here. Appreciate that. Go check them out. Also, go to iTunes or wherever you download this podcast and give it a 5-star review. That helps me out by letting everybody know that the quality of this content is good and that it needs to be shared. So there's that. I think that's it. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Let's get into today's episode with John Mulligan of Bourbon Barrel Game Calls. 3, 2, 1. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hunting Gear Podcast, brought to you by Feed Hub and Code Blue Sense. Go check them out. Pretty good products. John, I'm here today with John Mulligan of Bourbon Barrel Calls and Primal Divide, television web show. John, do you use mock scrapes at all?
I do. Big fan of mock scrapes.
Yeah. What, when you have used them, like, do they, have they worked for you in the past?
Yeah. You know, I think initially my early success was like inventory.
Yeah.
You know, I might not get a buck to revisit it constantly, but it seems like the majority of the bucks would at least come over and get their picture taken once. Right.
Yeah.
I think then I, once I had a little bit of success, then I tried to dive into it a little bit more, and I consulted with people that, you know, like you and I both know, like Sam Calora. He's a local.
Yep.
And he's got a lot of knowledge, you know, that he shares with people. So I started adapting some of his theories behind it, you know, and one that I still believe in today, it seems like a lot of people, when they use scents, they use it, they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to use it in the rut. Cause if I use it before then, the bucks are going to be like, aha, I caught an imposter. You know what I mean? Like, there is no way. It's only October 31st. There's no way that there's a doe in estrus.
Yeah.
But, you know, instead of being one of a thousand does, mm-hmm. I want to be one of one.
Yeah.
So I start, I use a lot of doe urine, but I switched to doe in estrus by the last week of October. I usually go ahead and switch over, but definitely have had a lot of success in recent years, a lot more than I did before. Yeah. And I don't know if I'm doing something exactly different, or maybe I'm just keeping some of my human scent out of there and not freshening them as often.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's something mock scrapes are something that I've been playing around with the last two seasons, and I'm going to be playing around with it again this upcoming season. And I just feel like there's so much to learn from putting a trail camera over a mock scrape. And whether they hit it and act like, whether they just come to sniff it, as long as the trail camera's there, then you got that data, you know? And so,
yeah. Well, and I think, like I said, I went back to what I first learned, that as soon as I put the scent out, that's when I got almost immediate attraction within 24 hours.
Yeah.
So now what I do is I create mock scrapes near my tree stands. So I have to walk past the mock scrape to get to my stand, and I freshen it up, on my way to the stand. And I've, like I said, I've had a lot more success, like, you know, getting deer to come to it within those first couple hours, you know, that first sit.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this is the Hunting Gear Podcast. Well, hang on a second. You are in full blown turkey mode right now, right? You're traveling for turkey hunts.
I'm spitting and drumming, brother.
All right. Where?
Yeah. I'm in Kentucky right now. I was in South Carolina, Georgia, in Kentucky now, and then we'll hit the opener in Ohio Saturday.
Okay.
And so I've only sat twice in Iowa.
Okay, two times in Iowa. And then are you going to try to make it back there for fourth season?
Yeah, so I'll make it back with my bow tag, and then I have a four-season gun tag.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to head up to that Decorah area.
Oh, nice.
I've got a buddy up there I'm going to try to hunt with up there.
Yeah, man, that part of the state is absolutely gorgeous, especially if you can get in, like, right when the ag fields drop off into the Missouri River Valley. Oh, my God, it's gorgeous up there, man. Lots of turkeys, too. Lots of turkeys.
Yes.
Bourbon Barrel Calls. All right. You are the owner of Bourbon Barrel Calls. You're the owner of Primal Divide. And is that it as far as businesses are concerned?
Johnny Utah Creative. And that's kind of a hodgepodge logo, product design, marketing, consulting kind of a company.
Yep. Okay. So three different entities there. I want to talk to you a little bit about being self-employed. Because I was trying to, my mom started asking me all these questions earlier today about, you know, how's it feel to be self-employed for as long as you've been doing this and things like that. And the only thing that popped into my head was fear. I mean, Jesus, I love doing what I'm doing, but all I think about is if the money's going to run out or not, you know?
Every day. Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about being self-employed and some of the positives and negatives with that.
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up, my dad was self-employed and he ran the business out of the house. So even as a kid, I kind of got to see that. And that should have been maybe a clue, like, hey, don't do that. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to work every Christmas. You're going to work every Easter, you know? But I grew up with that, so it kind of became second nature. But I mean, I had my first business when I was 7. I had another business when I was 13. Before I moved to Iowa, I was a part of a couple of businesses. I had a landscape company, obviously, you know, Wicked Tree Gear. And so I'd been a part of some other businesses over the years. So even though I was working for somebody, rolling a W-2, I always had another, something else kind of going on, a little side hustle, so to speak. But for the last 5 years, anyways, it's been 100% Johnny Utah Creative and Primal Divide and Bourbon Barrel.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of working for yourself because, you know, any motivational speaker you listen to, they're going to say, if you bet on yourself, you'll always win. And I am a firm believer in that cliche statement, but it's not for everybody because, like you just touched on, every minute of every day, and I get, you know, good friends of mine, even my camera girl, you know, we're on hunts, and she's like, you seem very stressed. Like, is it the hunt? And I'm like, no, I'm thinking Johnny Utah Creative. I'm thinking Bourbon Barrel Calls. I'm thinking Primal Divide. Like, there's money on the line, you know, like it's a business at the same time. Like, this is how I pay my mortgage or my groceries. So you're constantly thinking about it. I don't care what anybody says. Oh, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. bullshit.
Yeah.
You can still be stressed as hell and love what you do.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's constant fear.
Yeah.
It's, you have to go, 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 because it all comes down to you.
Yeah. And so now guys like us, we are in a spot where our business is also our passion. Right. And, and so talk to us a little bit about where sometimes that can be good because you love what you do, but then also talk about the negative sides about having your business be your passion.
Oh, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, do I really want to go through the trouble of filming this hunt today?
Yeah.
I just want to go hunt.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to go hunt. The next thing that comes to mind is, I hate social media. Social media is a means to an end for me.
Yeah.
I do it because I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to do it. I'm not a 17-year-old TikToker. You know, like, I could care less if strangers love me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not that shallow, right? Because I already know at the end of the day, nobody loves me more than me.
Yeah.
So,
right.
And I'm cool with that. So, like, you know, those are the things that come to mind. And there has been times over the last 5 years where I've kind of had to just sit back and think about it and remind myself, you are getting to hunt and take photos for a living.
Yeah.
You're producing episodes and content, and this is what you chose to do. This is what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to have to suck up some of the BS that comes along with it, whether it be contracts and making sure that your content deliverables are met on schedules and things like that. And then how about the guaranteed fact that you're trying to produce content with the main star of your film is a wild animal.
Right.
It's not an actor. So if you have a crap season, guess what? You might just have a crap show, you know, if you can't tell the story right and if it's not relatable. So that's always the balancing act. And I've always told the stories exactly how they laid out, the goods, the bads, and kind of let the chips fall where they, you know, where they fall.
Yeah. And then, so now you get to a point where this is where I'm at right now with my businesses. And this is like open book type shit here. And that is, you know, back in the day, I was able to go, you know what? If I don't use or love this product, I'm not going to work with them, right? I don't need to work with them. And I'm not saying this about any of the sponsors that I work with on this show or any other shows or the network, but it does go past that now. And you get into where it's like, okay, this is a business and the goal of this business is to make money so I can pay my mortgage type shit.
Yes.
And so it goes beyond, oh, I only use this product and I love this product, and it becomes, hey, I'm actually selling advertising space on something that is getting attention from an end user. So it's become more eye-opening in the last couple months, maybe over a year, to the point where I'm like, okay, now I understand why Drury's and some of the other bigger names do it like they do it, because it is a business and you grow so much. And when you're on the top of the food chain, in order to survive, you got to eat, right? And when I say that, I mean, you got to make money. And so continue doing what they're doing.
And I ran into that this year. You know, I had put, I was working with one of the larger, you know, the holding groups, mm-hmm. you know, that owns a lot of the different businesses, and they had a lot of budget cuts, and I lost several of my partnerships,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was last minute. It was like the day before ATA, and normally by ATA time, all my contracts are done, you know, they're signed early. So, I was like, oh crap, you know, and it was, man, you know, it was like 20% of my gross sales.
Yep.
So you go into a little bit of a scramble mode
because
you know, I'm trying to grow the show every year, i.e. I invest more in the show every year, you know what I mean? So, and let's face it, with current financials and economics, it's not like groceries are getting cheaper.
Oh, no.
Gas is getting cheaper.
No.
So interest rates are high, and you know, so you keep a lot of that comes into play. I will say that I when I first started, it wasn't, I didn't depend on it for my mortgage.
Yeah.
So I got to pick and choose who I worked with.
Exactly.
And then when it became my mortgage, I didn't get to pick and choose every brand. There were some of the brands that I'm like, it's a good product, but I don't know that it's the best in that category, but it's good. And as long as I felt like it was affordable and they were good people, then I could get behind it.
Yeah.
Now things have kind of started to come back around, and I've kind of gotten over that hump to where I can legitimately say with a straight face, with a polygraph, that all the brands I'm working with right now, I'm very, very happy and excited to be working with.
Yeah.
Have I left some money on the table? Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm at a point where I'm making a good living, and I am working with the brands that I want to work with. But, dude, it's the ebb and flow as you grow. Every time you grow, you know, things change. And then, you know, so, it's a unique business, and I don't think a lot of people understand it, or they might be hypercritical of who somebody's working with. Like, oh, that's not the best. Yep. Well, guess what? The best is not willing to pay for me to promote their product. But the second best, they're good quality dudes, they're innovating, and they want to grow, and they want to partner with me. So it'd be like criticizing who somebody dates.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't know how good she cooks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know those details. So, no, it's interesting that you said that, because I do think that's something that people don't realize, and it probably needs to be touched on from an understanding point, you know?
Yeah. Well, that, and I mean, that's just business in general, whether you've been in the landscaping business before, you know, hey, maybe, am I going to get as many customers? Am I going to get returning customers? Am I going to get this contract to plow this snow in the wintertime? Like, because there was a time there where, man, me and you were on the phone quite a bit during the Wicked Tree Gear days. And every time I talk to you, it's like you just got done being a police officer all day. And then it was time to plow snow for another 8 hours.
Dude, there would be days that I would park my cruiser, I would jump in a plow truck, and I would plow all the way until my next shift.
Yeah.
And then get right back in a cruiser. I mean, if the chief would have known how many days I was going without sleep, that probably was a little sketchy.
Right.
But coffee in 5 hour, and I was just hustling, man. Yep. I was trying to, you know, I was trying to make a living, get ahead.
Yep.
Isn't it? That's what you got to do.
I got to talk about this part of it real quick before we get into Bourbon Barrel. You know, a lot of people talk about sacrifice and support, you know, from, you know, like in order for me to do something, I got to sacrifice somewhere else, whether that's sleep, like you mentioned, whether that's doing something away from the family, you know, a whole bunch of different things. And yet all this grinding I did, dude, this is going to sound bad, but the only one who believed that I was going to make it was me. Like the closest people in my life that are supposed, like I would assume are supposed to be rooting for me, were all skeptical. And so it was like, I don't owe it to anybody except like that. Do you remember when Snoop Dogg in one of his awards?
I
was like, I want to thank me. Because I stayed up late and I grinded and I did this shit. And so, and now today I look back on it and I'm just like two things I learned is number one, I want to be more supportive, to the people around me's dreams. I don't, you know, being realistic is awesome, but at the same time, life is short and you can go do the norm and work in a factory or do this, or you can do it. Cause I'm not built for that. I'm not built for shift work. I'm not built to sit in a cubicle. I'm built for something different. And number one, I want to support. And number two, just like the grind, you know, I don't even know if I like the word or the term grind, because it implies that you're having to do something that you didn't want to do. But when I was working my normal job, come home, be a dad until 9-10 o'clock at night, and then work till 1-2 in the morning in some of those nights, and then have to get back up at 5 and go to work. I was doing it because I loved it, and I don't like, I don't look at that being a grind, you know what I mean?
No, and it's funny because as soon as you started going down this route, I thought of that Snoop Dogg video immediately. But, you know, and then it also, you know, another one that I saw on social media was your biggest hater is somebody you talk to every day.
Yeah.
And your biggest fan is someone you've never met.
Right.
And it's nature of the beast. It's humans. And that's why I've always been the type of person that doesn't rely on other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every day I get DMs from people that I met one time 8 years ago or met them at a trade show 3 years ago. Hey, who's your contact of so-and-so, or introduce me to so-and-so or whatever. I challenge somebody to point out a time where I said, hey man, can you do me a solid and introduce me to so-and-so?
Yeah.
I did it on my own.
Yeah.
And I was the same way when I was a cop. I actually got a bad reputation because a lot of the older guys were like, oh, look at Huffleman Stuffle Mulligan. He's just a cowboy out here, never asks for help, and just kicks in doors by himself and never calls for backup. And I wasn't doing it because I thought I was a badass.
Yeah.
I just thought that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're just supposed to be your own champion and be your own cheerleader.
Yeah.
Now, is it nice to have people cheer for you? Hell yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But I learned at a very, very early age that you better find motivation or discipline to be your own cheerleader without somebody else. Because if you don't, you'll never make it.
Yeah.
Rising tides floats all ships. You know,
yeah.
We can go on. You go on and on and on that there is no reason. No one else who shines ever going to cast shadow on me.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Yeah.
Never will that ever happen. But I think one of the things that we deal with in our industry right now is, from the outside looking in, it's very easy to paint the picture that you're making a living in the industry.
Yeah.
When in reality, 99% of these guys are getting a discount,
yeah,
you know, or something. But I get it. Fake it till you make it. They're out there hustling. Mm-hmm. They're trying to create a brand, create a name for themselves. So it's, but in reality, it's such a tight business. The amount of people that are actually making a full living in the outdoor industry is so finite.
Yeah.
It is. I can't stress this to anybody listening that is like, really? I thought there was a lot of people that made a full-time living. TV shows, I bet there's only 20 television shows. I bet it's less than that. Mm-hmm. Actually, I bet it's less than 20 television shows that are making a living from a TV show. Podcast in the outdoor space, there might be 3 or 4 that are legitimately making a full-time living, you know, from a podcast. It's a finite amount, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's so, so small. But because it is such a rat race, I think that creates a lot of the jealousy and animosity and a lot of the internal fighting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's people in this industry that I've met that I don't care for, but their success or failure does not interfere with my success or failure whatsoever.
Right.
I could care less, you right. know?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, we're going to pivot now. We're going to get into Bourbon Barrel calls. What year did you start Bourbon Barrel, or what year did Bourbon Barrel become an idea, and why did you decide to go into the realm of turkey calls?
So the spring of 2019 is when the idea was hatched. I had just shot a bird in Kentucky, and I had an 8-hour drive back to my driveway in Southeast Iowa. And the entire business, from beginning to end, all the way down to the melted wax, dripping down on the striker with the stamp logo, kind of a throwback to Maker's Mark.
Yep.
Every detail of the company was developed on an 8-hour drive. But great time to start a turkey call company in the spring, right? No, because Primos, Nightingale, and all these other guys, they're spending a ton of money in marketing, and I was dead ass broke.
Yep.
I started Bourbon Barrel with $300.
Yeah.
And that was for the first month of Shopify included in that. And buying the domain name. I waited until November of 19. No turkey call company is promoting turkey calls in November.
Right.
So I launched it in November. and I figure I wouldn't have any competition and I wouldn't have to spend any money in ad buys or anything like that.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
Dude, but sometimes you got to think outside the box.
Right. But I'll tell you this. Turkey content on my network is relatively zero interest. Oh, yeah. And even if there is some kind of turkey content that comes out, it's not getting downloaded. Yep. Right. And so,
but
in a business sense, you start to trickle it out there. Right. And it's like, okay, you're slowly growing so that when spring does come, you can drop the hammer and just put your foot on the gas.
Yep. Well, and then, so I already knew that when I launched it in November, it would give me November. I was trying to capitalize on Christmas sales, you know, bourbon drinking connoisseurs, you know, people that drink bourbon, but also turkey hunt and, you know, whatnot. So that was my idea, was launch it in a downtime, launch it right at Christmas, capitalize on some sales, maybe get a little revenue coming in, and then develop my game plan for the spring. And that was going to be the big launch. So I came up with the idea and even made the announcement on one of the hunting podcasts that I was going to chase a single season archery grand slam in the spring of 2020.
Yeah.
And then COVID had other plans,
right,
and started shutting down all these states. And so I remember talking to my wife about it and she was like, you can totally bail on this and no one's going to, like, you know, call you a quitter, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, if there's a will, there's a way. So flew to Florida, almost got stuck in Florida because they were trying to cancel flights and lock people down. Got out of Florida on a red eye, made it back to Iowa. And of course in Iowa, you know, we were pretty safe there. There wasn't a lot of restrictions, you know?
Right.
But then I drove to Texas and got a Rio, went to the Black Hills and got my Miriam, and then came back to Iowa and finished it up in like 32 days.
Yeah.
Again, all of that was to drive a lot of promotion, you know, to the turkey calls.
Yeah. So on this 8-hour drive, right, the ideas are awesome, right? I could sit here in my office and I could brainstorm all day long. Yeah. But you come into the real world when it's like, okay, shipping, manufacturing, branding, all packaging, all this stuff that comes with a hard item that you're selling.
Yeah.
What was that process like, getting the materials necessary to build the calls? Where are the calls built? Things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I was fairly familiar that there was a few suppliers. Obviously people that are making turkey calls, they're getting their crystal and their slate, you know, they're getting that stuff somewhere.
Right.
Right. So I had to locate that. It really didn't take that, it wasn't that hard to locate. The key components was the raw material, and that was the bourbon barrel heads. Mm-hmm. Being from Kentucky, I had it in there. I knew exactly where I could go to get unlimited supply of, you know, bourbon barrel heads. Mm-hmm. The other interesting part is, I think a lot of people kind of glass over, is everybody's like, hashtag conservation, 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 as they cut down a brand new tree to make a turkey call.
Right.
You know, that's another little thing that I feel, like I said, I don't think people quite pay enough attention to, is that, you know, turkeys love to roost in white oak trees, and Kentucky bourbon barrels are made from white oak. And I'm using a reclaimed wood source that's already served its purpose. It was at a cooperage and became a barrel. And then now it's trash.
Yeah.
It's either going to become a craft project for somebody, or they're just going to scrap them. So I'm taking a reclaimed source, a green source, so to speak, and turning it into something without cutting, you know, I'm not cutting down any trees to make bourbon barrel calls.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the components that was part of the backstory. The hardest part for me was, I had a cousin in Kentucky that had a lathe, and we had spun, a couple of pots, and we had one that sounded really good. The problem was his production. He could only make two a day on his days off.
Yeah.
And he worked 5 days a week. So I'm like, dude, you can make four a week. I'm not starting a business to sell 4 turkey calls a week.
Right.
So I had a buddy being in Kentucky, Georgetown, Kentucky. He was at Toyota, and he was a CNC, not CNC. He was a CAD guy.
Yep.
So I shipped him one of the pots, and the CNC CAD program that is written for bourbon barrel was written at Toyota in Kentucky at the Toyota factory. So anyways, once I had that software, then I just had to source, you know, a guy that had a CNC table that could cut these, you know, in bulk.
Yeah.
So what I do is I produce the actual head. It looks like a hockey puck.
Yep.
And it's kiln dried because it's wet wood. You know, obviously it's been holding bourbon for 12, 15 years. It's kiln dried. And then, once it's dry, then I ship it to him, and, then he can cut, you know, if I ship him 50, you know, he can cut all 50 in a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the biggest piece of it, was figuring that out. The rest of it was a lot of, you know, Etsy research, some, looking in catalogs and finding the packaging materials. Even my packages are made in the United States. The metal tent box is actually sourced out of a company in New Jersey.
Awesome.
So every single component is made in the U.S. So that's another kind of a cool thing too.
Absolutely, man. That's a win, if you ask me, especially in this market where everything's coming from somewhere else. What about the crystal or the glass?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So that, again, a lot of that is, there are, you know, doesn't matter what turkey call company, everybody's buying their stuff from the same people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So now the ones that are overseas, you know, they have their supplier, but people that are sourcing in the United States, everybody's buying from the same 2 or 3 people. So I was able to find a guy that could supply me with all the crystal, all the slate, the aluminum, the copper, the ceramic, all that comes from the same company.
Gotcha. Cool. And then do you assemble it at your place?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Right in the, I did a video one time. I went live on the Instagram, page where I was like, coming to you live from Bourbon Barrel headquarters, which is also the southwest corner of my basement, you know what I mean?
right. I do that every once in a while. You know, I'm going live from the Sportsman's Empire headquarters, which is a loft in my garage, you know. So
right.
Yep. Okay, so awesome, you got something reclaimed wood, you got, you know, made in America, but does it sound like a turkey? You know what I mean? So when you were putting this together and prototyping your first, you know, version, your first version, what kind of tweaks did you have to make to actually get the call to sound good?
Yeah. And, you know, and I have some manufacturing, experience, but, I don't know what you call that, like an auditory engineer. Mm-hmm. I don't have that. I mean, hell, between race cars and guns in my old careers, I'm about half deaf as it is. but, you know, I know what hens sound like, right? And what I ended up changing a lot of the tweaks that I did was the height of the soundboard, was varying the height of the soundboard. And that's how I was getting some different pitches and stuff like that. Once I found one that was very universal, then it's just a matter of, you know, I mean, it's real simple. Ford, it's not random that Ford releases a forest green colored truck, because Chevy just did the year before too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So it's a little monkey see, monkey do, but, you know, I knew that guys had slate calls and guys had aluminum and there was copper, you know, things like that. So I just started playing around with some of the different ones, and some of them didn't work good.
Yeah.
You know, with my pots, my strikers, we scratched those. But over the time, we've kind of tweaked some different things a little bit, changing the soundboard material that is not seen under the aluminum, or you can't see under the copper, change up some of those material. And that's, I'll be honest, that's the fun part, is there's just a ton of like trial and error. Like, I've got all these random prototype calls that I'm like, now that sounds like a hen that has pneumonia. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you just start coming up with goofy stuff and you're like, oh, that sounds pretty good. And then we just take it out in the field and try it. That was what was really important too, you know, with the original crystal over aluminum call. That was the one that I took and I did the single season slam with. And I said, okay, this one call worked on all four species of turkeys in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a huge proving ground for that.
Yeah. And so how, so you have glass, you have slate, and you have copper. Is that correct?
Copper. Yep.
Okay.
Aluminum, ceramic.
Yeah. That's crazy. So you actually take the striker to the aluminum and it, or to, excuse me, to the copper, and it makes the noise like a turkey.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. You have to rough it up a little bit. You don't have to quite condition it as much as you would like crystal or glass.
Yep.
But you just, you have to rough it up just a little. And you can do that with like a Scotch-Brite pad or, you know, something like that, a scouring pad that you use on like pot, you know, stubborn yep. pots and pans.
Yep.
And that's all you need to do, is you're just creating that friction is yeah. what's making that sound.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. How are the strikers made?
So they're made, they're actually spun, on a lathe, and the strikers are actually made from white oak as well.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
Which is not a very common material used for strikers.
Right. Right.
Usually Osage or carbon fiber tipped or something like that. It's a little more common. You know, really hardwoods, cherries, you know, things like that. But white oak just happened to work
yeah.
very universally with all my stuff.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So made in America, right?
Made in America, yes.
The look and feel of these is also, I mean, just looking at it. I mean, I'm on the website now. Just looking at it, you can tell it's a higher quality. And, you know, I've had a bourbon barrel call in my hands before at some of these trade shows, and it's very well put together. And so, you know, people are going to listen to this. They're going to come to Bourbon Barrel Calls webpage, and they're going to look at the price of some of these turkey
yep.
calls, and they are not priced like the striker or the slate calls that you're going to find at Walmart. Why the price of these?
Yep. Yeah, so one, because they're not mass produced in China.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first one. The second one is they're all hand built. Every call, every single call has been hand built by me.
Yeah.
The wax that's applied to the strikers, that's done individually.
Yep.
And stamped individually. So that's what the person is paying for. They're paying for something that's made in America. There's a backstory to it. You know, it's handmade. And it's just, it's cool and unique. And so that's the reason for that.
Yeah. Now, do you do personalization on some of these as well?
We do a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, we've done, that was another thing that I wanted to offer up, was to do some custom stuff. So we can do custom logos or names or memorials, you know, that's really popular. We do a lot of that. And then it got into doing a lot of corporate calls. You know, Leupold, they did like 120 of them. John Dudley, he did a little over 100. I think it was like 106 or something like that he put on his website and sold out in 72 hours.
That's awesome.
So we've done a lot of corporate calls, and they'll give them away as Christmas gifts and, you know, things like that to staff and employees. And it's funny because I work with Leupold, and they ordered like 120 of them. And they told me, hey, we're going to give them out to all of our teams, you know, people that we work with and all of our shows that we partner with. And I'm like, well, for the love of God, don't send me my own call back, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Give mine to somebody else.
Okay. And so initial reaction from the, you know, your customers when this finally launched and when you started getting these calls in people's hands?
Yeah. The initial reaction were people were like, dude, this is super cool. Like, that's a cool, it's a cool novelty.
Yeah.
that was the first initial reaction. And I'm like, but have you used it? And they're like, nah, man, it's just cool. I'm going to have it. I'm going to put it in a shelf and hold on to it. I'm like, no, actually use it.
Right.
Like it is cool, but I spent a lot of time making sure that they sounded good. And then you start getting a wave of people that start sending DMs and they're like, okay, I went ahead and scuffed it up. Damn, this thing actually works. Like it works really well, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I think a lot of that too is, I know you and I, we've had this conversation. If some of the original deer scents that people used, everybody used the same deer scent. Mm-hmm. And then you come out with a different scent. The deer have never smelled that before. Mm-hmm. This is new. It's something unique. You know, I think sometimes just if my calls have a little bit different sound, sometimes that's what it takes.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, when I go turkey hunting, I take two or three different calls. And if Slate's not working today, all right, let me switch over to Crystal, see if they'll bite on that.
Yep. I feel you. That's pretty cool.
It's no different than having different crankbaits or something like fishing.
Exactly. You know, I'm not a serious turkey hunter, so I can't use a mouth call. My box call is now broken, and so I have two Slate calls that I use. And, you know, like you said, one ceramic and one, I forget what the other one I think it's glass. And so anyway, I get it, man. A couple different sounds, you know, and sometimes when humidity actually plays a huge part in it too. If it's humid out, one of them works better than the other one just from having it out and stuff.
You just said you're not a big turkey hunter, but you just picked up on something that I bet 98% of turkey hunters don't realize. Is humidity will change the sound of a call.
Yeah.
So kudos to you. You're more of a turkey hunter than you think.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe. Okay. And so as you know, just like any company, you get set, and this is how I operate, you know, on my business, I get comfortable doing something and then it becomes, you know, and it becomes almost automatic, not necessarily automatic, but almost automatic. And then we have, it's companies running well. Okay, now it's time to expand into something different. Why did you go from a turkey Slate call to a grunt tube?
It was something different. I wanted to see if I could even do it. And it's very tricky because not all barrel companies cut the wood the same. Mm-hmm. And some heads are thicker and some are thinner. So when I source my reclaimed heads, I have to try to find the thicker heads because I need the thicker piece of wood to turn those on a lathe to make those grunt tubes. Now, the grunt tubes, I only offer those in the fall. I usually will do a run of like 30 or 40 of them, and that's it. When they're gone, they're gone. The reason for that is because I actually turn those myself by hand. Those aren't done on a CNC machine table. They're done in that same headquarters in that southwest corner of the basement.
Yep.
And so those are tricky to do, but it offered something else. It kind of offered else something in that fall, you know. Turkey hunting is primarily 99% in the spring. So, you know, the ebb and flow of my business is I get peak sales in the spring and then it kind of trickles. And then it would kind of peak a little bit around Christmas time, you know, for gifts, and then it dies back off. Yep. So I was trying to find something to kind of minimize the peaks and valleys of the business, which is then why we started launching and promoting like the wedding stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, reminding, you know, doing like groomsmen gifts. You and I guarantee you we have a collection of flasks that we'll never use that we got as a groomsman gift. So anybody listening, if you're about to get married, don't buy your groomsman a flask. We don't need any more.
No, I got enough. Different. Right.
Yep.
Right.
So that kind of offered up something. Again, it's just trying to minimize the peaks and valleys of the business because like a lot of people, if it's not on the forefront of my mind, I forget about it.
Yep.
And sometimes it's hard to like, oh, let's get ramped up to make a bunch of turkey calls for the spring, and then I'm not going to think about it ever again for 9 months. Yep. So it kind of keeps the business stable. And then, you know, Zuckerberg and those guys and Meta, if we're not posting content every day, you know, then we fall down on the search. And it's just always trying to keep that, you know, steadiness of the business.
Yeah. Yeah. So I look at what you've created already, and my mind is looking at the material you use in, and not necessarily like, it's not necessarily a mouth call, because a mouth call doesn't use wood. You know, it obviously uses some kind of plastic material, but from a material standpoint, I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, is there a duck call in the future for Bourbon Barrel?
Yeah. So we introduced some duck calls and a goose call.
You did already?
Yeah. We did. I took them back down from the site.
Okay.
Because the material, it's even a thicker piece of material that you need.
Okay.
For those. And so I went through a spell there where all of my outlets to get my heads from, they were sending me thin heads. And I'm like, dang it. I'm like, I need the thicker heads. They're like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. So we might bring those back. We've got some people that ran them. There were some of the Sitka waterfowl guys that I sent some prototypes to, and they were like, dude, this is pretty legit. But here's the problem. A turkey hunter is a turkey hunter. I don't think most turkey hunters are that bougie.
Yeah.
Deer hunters, you can get bougie, but for the most part, deer hunters are deer hunters.
Yeah.
No offense to waterfowl guys. If it doesn't say Lamborghini on it, he ain't driving it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I was told from some of the big duck hunters, and they were like, hey, man, I get it. You're down at Utah, but that don't mean shit in the waterfowl world. You know what I mean? Like, you got to have a big name if you're ever going to make this a viable thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we probably sold 50, you know, but then the sales kind of started trickling off. It was kind of like, once your immediate friends and family buy it,
there you go.
You know, then it kind of trickled off.
Yep.
But my thought was, it's like trail cameras. Do you know anybody that owns one trail camera?
They either own zero or 40.
Exactly. Yep. So, and the same thing with duck calls. You know, you see those guys with their necklaces on there, you know, and they got 40 different calls. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that was another reason why I thought, well, maybe we can get away with doing some waterfowl calls, because it's not like people just have one.
Yep.
I didn't go to private school.
There you go.
So I wasn't accepted. I wasn't accepted into the club.
There you go. All right. One thing that I thought was really cool is how new is the game call?
So that was launched that was my April Fool's. I love doing April Fool's jokes. You know, I did the Shed Cat video a few years ago. And so every year I'm always looking at doing April Fool's things. And I have next year's April Fool's idea already mapped out. But it started out as strictly as an April Fool's joke. And then it was like, haha, surprise. On April 3rd, I said, okay, I'm putting, you know, 10 of these on the site or whatever. And that's it. When they're gone, they're gone. And I think we sold three like the first day, you know, that those were live.
Okay. So this was actually a April Fool's joke until people said, hey, I want one of those. Like,
correct.
Dude, there's a lot of time, especially if you're hunting in a blind and you're waiting on turkeys. There's a lot of time when you have nothing to do. Like, that would be awesome.
Yeah, because you get those days where, like, I just went through it today.
Yeah.
The birds were hammering on the limb. They pitched down, and then they, you know, they might gobble. And then so you're kind of sitting there. My rule of thumb is if the birds aren't gobbling, I'll just throw out some yelps or some clucks once every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I'll set the call back down. Probably doze off,
mm-hmm.
in between, wake back up, strike it up. But there's a ton of downtime. And let's face it, a lot of places where there's really good turkey hunting, there might not be phone service.
Yeah.
So you can't swipe and scroll the social media world. It was kind of a joke, but it was also like, but this is actually, it's real, you know, like you could kill some time playing this game. And it's an old game. Remember, like, this is a game that you and I played when we were kids, because we're not young cats.
Yeah. And you would usually get them at a parade of some sort. Like they're about that big, and there's maybe two things, or the one that I loved playing had water in it. And you would push the button and it would squirt the water up, and then the ball would come down back into, and you would have to, yep.
Uh-huh.
Well, what else do I need to know about bourbon barrel calls, man? 2% for conservation?
So we participated in 2% for conservation. We fell off of that when they did a lot of their like restructuring and whatnot. But for the first, I think 2 years, like 20 and 21, and I think 22, I was a member of 2% for conservation, not last year. So I am looking at different organizations to partner with, whether it's Turkeys for Tomorrow or somebody.
Yep.
I just want to see a group that's very vested in what they're doing, and there's good active participation within the members.
Yeah,
that's almost like a better bid, like a small business men's group, so to speak.
Yep,
that's what I would like to see happen more with some of these organizations. Everybody needs one.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I have three children, and I like paying my mortgage and buying groceries. So one of my buddies, I have to tell you this, one of my buddies, he had a seasoning business. And if you turned up the bottle on the bottom side of the business, it said, "Thank you for your support. I don't want to go back to 9 to 5.
Yeah, that's the truth, man. That's the truth. Yep. So go buy a bourbon barrel call just to prevent John from having to be a cop again. Right.
Yes. I'm a washed up race car driver. I already sold my landscape company. I'm a, average photographer, but, I was probably a good cop. I just didn't really like, I don't want to have to buy heroin anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Nobody does. Well, some people do, which is why you had a job in the first place. So,
exactly.
John, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and educate us about bourbon barrel game calls, man. If people listen to this and they want to find out more about bourbon barrel, where should we send them?
Yeah, Instagram, bourbon barrel calls is the handle on that. That'll be the most active, for bourbon barrel stuff. And then also be sure to check out your stuff, because you're going to be sending me one of your logos and I'm going to make you your very own custom bourbon barrel call with missing a finger.
There you go. So it's going to be ergonomical for someone who's missing a right index finger.
Perfect.
All right, man. Well, hey, good luck in the turkey woods in Iowa and where Kentucky and Ohio. And man, we'll talk to you when we talk to you.
Yeah, yesterday was awesome, man. We took Corey Anderson, the Bellator light heavyweight champion.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Took Corey out yesterday, got him his first turkey, and we called and we worked this bird for a day and a half. And we finally pulled him up out of this creek, which turkey hunters will appreciate that. If you can get a bird to climb vert like that and come up on top of a ridge, that's doing work. So we were awesome. He made a hell of a shot. I was very impressed with his shot, and he gave him the old knockout punch. He got his first turkey, so that's cool. So he's actually letting me hunt his property while we're down here for a couple days. So
perfect.
See if I can get one myself.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Good luck, man.
All right. Appreciate it, brother. Thank you.